It's time for the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, and I'm here with my fill-in co-host this weekend, Dr. Norman Mental, and every weekend we're here and we're doing life together, and so we're so glad that you've joined us.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think I needed you this weekend because of our topic.
It's Super Bowl week. It's the single most watched sporting event in the world, single game. World Cup.
I was going to say, World Cup soccer is huge, but you're saying single game, sporting event.
So it's really hyped, as we know. It's been hyped nonstop. Last year, did you know that advertisers spent $5 million for each 30-second TV ad?
That's a lot of money. Wow.
Every year it goes up and up and up and up and up. But we love the hoopla. We love it. Remember when Whitney Houston did the national anthem?
That was my favorite.
Yeah, it was most people's. This year, Lady Gaga.
She should be quite entertaining.
You know what? She's got a good voice.
She has a fantastic voice. I'm not always sure about the antics around it. Well, in addition to the hype, there's been a great deal of controversy around the safety of the game, and we've been hearing more and more about that all year long. People are looking at what is the short-term impact of playing sports, particularly football, the long-term impact of that, and here to talk about that with us today is Dr. Mark Rolfs. He's a sports medicine physician for Liberty University, and he's a colleague of mine at the College of Osteopathic Medicine. Welcome, Dr. Rolfs. Are you hyped?
I am hyped.
Are you a fan?
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
Mark was born and raised in Chicago. In the suburbs.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Fellow Chicagoan.
The University of Washington, undergrad. Doctor of Pharmacy degree, practicing as a pharmacist. Then he decided to go out to Bible seminary in Portland at Multnomah. What was that all about?
Oh, it was just a time in my life where I needed to change my focus.
I guess so.
You know, isn't that great? A physician that took time to go to Bible school.
Well,
that is fantastic.
It's so integrative.
That's why we have
mind.
Him here.
That's right.
Because we need
that
perspective.
But then he came back and did a DO, a Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine, at VCOM, Virginia Tech.
Correct. That's
Virginia
on Virginia Tech's
College
campus.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. And then you had an internal medicine, family medicine residency in Indianapolis. Good grief, you've been all over the place.
Physicians have to do that, Norm.
Right.
And then, as you said, Dr. Linda, he is now at LUCOM, the Liberty University College of Osteopathic Medicine, and lives in Virginia with his wife, Marianne, and four children, and we're sure glad you're here.
I'm glad to be here.
And one of the reasons we asked him is because he completed a sports medicine fellowship. He's the trainer. He's the physician for football.
I personally attest to him fixing my knee.
Glad to help.
I was very glad you helped.
In recent years, the NFL has made many, many rule changes.
You mean the No Fun League?
That's one perspective. The hope is that it's going to help players and it's going to help the safety issues that are going on. We're looking at trying to decrease the injuries. It was interesting. A few weeks ago, I was coming into work and I was listening to a NASCAR guy. I know zero about NASCAR, but he decided to stop because his wife is with rehab medicine. And she said, you know what? You got to stop this because if you get in a crash, I'm concerned about what your head's going to be like in a number of years. And so he's stopping because of that, which is one of the concerns that we hear constantly with football.
Family members.
So I looked at an infograph, which is something that is a picture of where the injuries all go. And it looked at all the NFL players that suffered injuries in 2014. So we're going to get Dr. Mark to talk about that. Concussions are the most talked about in the press. But there's lots of other injuries. Sure. There are injuries that are career-ending that we don't hear as much about, like crushed hands and fractures and breaks and tears. When I looked it up, the three most common injuries were leg-related. Does that surprise you, Dr. Rolfs?
No, not really.
We don't hear about that.
Well, we hear ACL, MCL. Would that count as legs?
Lower extremity, correct.
Yeah.
Upper extremity is another one. In the data in the 2014 season, players sustained more than 1,300 injuries on the field.
Wow.
Does that surprise anybody?
No.
It's a violent sport.
Right. Right.
It is.
I think concussions are more in the injury spotlight because of the potential long-term effects on the mind.
And probably because there have been some very high-profile people who have committed suicide and that sort of thing. So it draws a lot of attention to
Absolutely.
It. And back in 2012, thousands of players got together and they filed a lawsuit together against the NFL claiming that the league had hidden information that linked football-related head trauma to permanent brain injuries. Like Junior Seau, I was talking about Dave Duerson from the Bears, our ability to now examine our brains post-mortem. That means we can't do it while you're alive. Is that the idea?
That's the idea.
Is that the CTE that we hear about all the time? Tell us what that is.
Sure. Chronic traumatic encephalopathy is linked to repeated concussions that causes some neuropsychological deficits. But if you look at them, there's some protein changes in the brain. And the research is trying to figure out what causes that exactly. Is it the number of concussions, the duration of the concussions? Is it the insult at a particular time? And we're not really sure.
Mark, does that mean the brain has been shaken or bruised? Because I've heard it in lay terms defined as the brain bruise.
That's a simplistic way to put it. At the cellular level, it's been observed that brain injury is metabolic disturbances of the nerve cell. So it's sort of in shock.
One of the things that I've heard from other people is that it's right. the number of times that you get hit. And I think of those defensive guys, that their whole job is to hit people.
Yeah.
That's got to be worse for them.
Right.
In 2015, the last time they've counted total, they had 96 total head injuries alone. That's kind of
That's
crazy.
A lot.
Why would people even play this sport if they know that they're going to get hurt? Or do they just believe they're not going to get hurt?
I think that's a philosophical question more than anything. But people play the sport because they enjoy it. Presumably at this level, they're good at it. They make a lot of money at it. And the risk is not substantial. You're going to probably get a concussion if you play football long enough. But what are the long-term consequences? That's what they're trying to figure out. Because there are people that have had concussions that don't develop chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So what is that key point?
Yeah.
You can play and you can be fine. And then you can play and you can look at someone like Jim McMahon, the former Chicago Bears.
Super Bowl Bears.
Yeah, he's had a lot of disturbance from all of this.
Yeah.
It's like rolling the dice in some ways when you play, if you don't know your biochemistry and how this is all going to impact you, yet people continue to play. We're going to come back after a break and we're going to talk a little bit about the protocols that have been put in place.
Yes, we are. And we also have a guy we send out on the street to talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
And we send him out to talk about kids and sports injuries. And here's a mom with a very strong opinion.
No, because I don't want them to injure themselves or, you know, have something that's going to affect them the rest of their lives.
She's pretty specific,
isn't she?
She's pretty adamant.
She is. So when we come back, we're going to talk more about parents and sports injuries and kids and everything that's going on. This is the Dr. Linda Mental Radio Show.
For more information on today's topic, visit drlindamental.com, where you can read her blogs or sign up for her newsletter.
Are you a mom or a dad trying to do your best to raise a healthy weight child in an unhealthy eating culture? Do you often struggle with how to respond when your child asks if she is fat or if he needs to lose weight? Do you wonder, what is normal and how do I best impact my child and his or her eating habits? Well, hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mental, and my book, Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World, teaches parents how to raise healthy kids in an overscheduled, fast food, video game world by making simple choices, easy changes, and instilling good habits that will improve everyone's life today and forever. Winner of the Mom's Choice Award, Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World, will give you this confidence, the confidence you need to take charge of your child's eating and raise a healthy weight child.
Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World. Available on Dr. Linda's website, drlindamental.com, and available online where books are sold.
Welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm Dr. Norm Mental. I get to be the co-host this weekend while we talk about the Super Bowl, like everybody else in the universe is doing. Hope you're enjoying the program so far. Our special guest today is Dr. Mark Rolfs, a sports medicine physician and team physician. There's no getting around it. little boys and sometimes little girls are going to be watching the Super Bowl, dreaming about when they might be on the field. We hear athlete after athlete say, I've always dreamed of being here. I wanted to be here. This is what I've always wanted to do. But we want to talk about more than the glory of the Super Bowl, because young kids are being involved more and more in sports injuries.
From the female perspective, since I'm the only female in the room, playing football, since it can take such a physical toll, Dr. Rawls, we didn't talk about arthritis. That's a big problem, isn't it, for those guys when they get older?
Right.
So there's a ton of stuff that can happen to people. From that physical toll that it can take, I think it can even shorten people's lifespan. Some of them are even disabled in retirement. I know I'm picking on the few that this happens to. I keep looking at, why do they do it, Norm?
Don't ask me. I never played professional football.
But you played soccer, which we're going to talk about.
But honestly, if I could make $5 or $10 million a year, I'd probably say, hey, I've got enough money to pay for meds when I'm old.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Let's listen to our listeners and see what they say about that, because they did weigh in on this when we went out in the street.
I would let my children play football someday. I think the risk for those things is relatively low, but the benefits of, you know, being involved in a team sport, having people rely on you and getting out and working hard, I think a lot of those values outweigh some of the physical risk.
I think that as someone grows up, I want them to know the risks that come with playing football. However, if that's their passion and they want to follow that, as long as they know what they're getting into and the risks involved, then they can go ahead and play it. That's great. They need to follow their dreams.
I definitely think I would let my kids play football. I think more of it is recreational than like a safety hazard. And most teams and leagues kind of take the appropriate precautions that they need. So I don't think it should be like a really big deal.
Those were three guy opinions.
Right. I noticed that. Right.
So do you think gender plays a part?
Absolutely. There are lines of work that take a physical toll on people and can shorten lifespans and all the things you want to talk about. Law enforcement, firefighters, military personnel. There's risk involved in a lot of different things.
Sure.
I heard one of the gentlemen talk about passion. If we encourage our children, and even as adults, we try to find things that we gravitate towards, that we have talent for, and try to do those things. Mm-hmm. You want to do a job and be happy with what you do.
Right.
If it's play football, then you have to weigh that risk out.
Right. Wasn't it Brett Favre's dad or somebody's dad? Was it Tom Brady or somebody? When they asked him, would you let your kid now play football? They said no.
Right. Well, we know certainly a lot more than we did 15, 20 years
ago.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that impacts a lot of parents' thinking.
It's like informed consent in some ways. I'm thinking about this as a clinician, that you tell people the risks, the pros and the cons about it, and then you have to leave it up to people to make the decision of what to do.
Right. And that's part of what the lawsuit was about in the first place, was that football players felt like the NFL concealed information or never made that known, that this is a risk. And it can be a problem later on in life. And they felt like they covered all of that up and didn't give informed consent. But now the cat's out of the bag, if you will. We know the risks. So now it's a matter of making an informed decision.
Do you think it's a good idea? They've been trying to do things to increase the safety. We didn't get into equipment and
helmets,
all that stuff. Right. Do you see a change in that?
Yeah. When I was at Virginia Tech, both as a medical student and as a fellow, they are one of the pioneers in developing safety equipment, particularly helmets. And so they have sensors in over half of the football players' helmets, and they've had that for years. And they're trying to, along with other universities, detect impact and acceleration and angles and try to find and develop the optimal safety equipment to help prevent concussions.
It's becoming very scientific.
It very much is.
Yeah.
It's got to be a good thing, though. If it can do anything to decrease injury,
that would be good.
We've been talking mostly about professional football because it is the Super Bowl week. Rachel has concerns about more than just football.
I would not allow my children to participate, whether it be football, basketball, baseball, soccer. There's always potential for injuries. It'd be really hard for me if my son really wanted to play football. It was like his passion for life. It would be hard to say no, but I would not want them to play.
I wonder if she has kids yet that said anything.
It kind of sounds like she doesn't have a six-year-old boy yet.
We had a son who was pretty passionate about soccer.
And he complains to this day about his shoulder and his knee.
He does, and he was kicked around a lot and did headers and all that kind of stuff. What do you think about those other sports, like soccer? Is there a safe one?
There are sports that are safer than others.
Which one for the moms that are listening?
Well,
golf?
Yeah, golf would be one. I mean, if you look at NCAA annual estimate of concussions for practice and competition, the top three sports are football, which is by far like 35% of annual concussions. But it's followed by women's soccer.
Women's soccer.
And women's basketball.
Are they like hitting each other or what is that?
Well, I think it's elbows to the head.
Oh, elbows. You know, okay. Various... Maybe because there's such a huge span in size.
But no sport is fail-safe. I mean, I've taken care of a male swimmer who hit his head on the bottom of the pool.
Oh.
I've taken care of a high school volleyball player who took a spike off of her face, led to concussion symptoms. I've had a cheerleader who fell on the gymnasium.
College cheerleader here. That is not a safe sport.
It is not. Those are listed as limited contact sports, but you can still have accidents.
We have a colleague whose son plays baseball, and he was going down for a catch or something and got hit.
Yeah.
You don't think about that in baseball.
Well, baseball, they wear the batting helmet because so many people get hit from a pitch, but you don't think about getting hit in the field.
Yeah.
But that is why they continue to wear the batting helmet when they run the bases.
Right.
Here's a dad who says yes, but he's interested about age issues.
I still would let him play football, but it would be more of a high school thing rather than youth sports. I think it's too early when they're 10 years old.
It's kind of early. What do you think about that?
I don't think that we know the optimal age for initiating contact sports. One thing we do know is that younger children tend to have worse outcomes. We're trying to figure out what that age is. And as a result, many sports organizations have implemented certain parameters, like with soccer in games, heading is not allowed until 13 years of age.
And really?
Oh,
hockey,
really?
They've eliminated checking up until the age of 13. And the American Academy of Pediatrics came out with a stronger stance, and they asked them to reconsider and change that age to 15. So they're trying to put things in place to minimize contact, the things that are going to increase the risk for concussion.
Is there something physiological change at 13 or 15, or are they trying to expand the window of safety?
Correct.
Yeah. Here's what I'm thinking, especially when you see these little guys in football. They've got these kind of big heads and smaller bodies. Isn't that the issue in terms of the child development?
Yeah, it is. And they're also trying to, at the pilot level, trying to do studies with sensors in their helmets, which is a little more difficult to do.
Yeah.
But they're not generating as much force most of the time as, say, a college athlete is. But there are still occasions where you get that big kid that can really lay a hit on someone.
He hits puberty sooner, and he's a whole lot bigger than the little guy who's sitting there defenseless.
And he's the guy the high school coaches get excited about, and then when he gets bigger, the college coaches get excited about. I read an article recently about a young man who committed suicide after college. He had begun playing early. His dad was a peewee coach and let him in when he was three. And he started learning how to tackle by leading with his head. Well, that kid probably had concussions from the time he was three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, isn't that targeting thing we're not supposed
That's
to be doing?
That's targeting that we're not
is.
Supposed to
it
do.
It is. I would say wait a little bit, but then I'm the mom.
But you're the mom. Okay. We'll continue our conversation after this short break. More with Dr. Linda, Dr. Rolfs, and me. Yay, safety of sports. Be right back.
This is the Mental Health Minute. Here's Dr. Linda.
Are your priorities all out of line? Are you running through the kitchen because the sight of dishes in the sink is more than you can bear? Or avoiding the laundry room for fear a pile of dirty jeans will jump up and grab you? Are extra hours spent at work or outside commitments taking a toll on your home and family? Hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor. And if this sounds anything like your house, you may have a priority problem. Getting your priorities in line might feel like trying to rein in a bucking bronco, but it can be done. Here are a few keys. Take small steps. Don't try to attack laundry and housekeeping all at once. Spread the work out and enlist the help of family members. And don't put things off. Piling another dish and a cup in the sink won't help. Instead, try and stay ahead by handling cleaning up more regularly. Look, we all have occasions when we have to hurry off and leave a job or two undone. But if this is your habit, you may need a priority adjustment. And you can do it one step at a time.
To check out Dr. Linda's books on weight control, Lose It for Life, Press Pause Before You Eat, Breaking Free from Compulsive Overeating, and Raising Healthy Kids, go to drlindamental.com.
You are listening to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Hi, I'm Dr. Norm Mental, getting to fill in today for Chris Weigel. He'll be back next weekend. And our special guest today is Dr. Mark Rolfs, a sports medicine physician and team physician. Interesting conversation based around Super Bowl, but about now more recently, children playing at younger and younger ages. Do your kids play sports?
Yes. One of my sons swims and the other one plays baseball.
And you feel good about those? They feel safe to you?
I do. I didn't choose those sports because of safety reasons. It was just something they gravitated
to. But did your wife choose those?
She did not.
But she's saying baseball in their ear for a few years.
I think they played baseball because I played baseball.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Well, that's usually the
thing, isn't
it?
My son played soccer.
Our son played because you played. My daughter cheered because I cheered. Oh, my gosh. Yes, here it is. It's a pattern.
It is.
In the last segment, we were talking a little bit about these pros and cons and trying to figure out some balance in all of this. But it seems like we worship athletes in our country.
Celebrities, athletes.
Yeah. Right. I mean, LeBron James makes over $20 million a year. And I want to contrast this, which is amazing, because the average scientist who's discovering a lot of important things, probably discovering that helmet at Virginia Tech that they needed to use to be safer, his or her salary is about
$77,000. Wow.
And I like LeBron James, so I'm not putting him down, but we got to think about this. While he's getting paid millions to throw a ball into a hoop, many of our teachers responsible for our kids' education, what they're going to be, and all of this are struggling to put food on the table. Did you guys know that the average teacher makes about $35,000 a year?
I agree. That's criminal.
It's astounding. Mm-hmm. Bleacher Report points out that every basket that was scored by Kobe Bryant was equivalent to the average teacher's yearly salary.
Well, those people are going to argue that they bring in television ratings and they bring in thousands and thousands of fans per game, and then they make billions of dollars for their team. And
I know,
so
but is it idol worship, Norm? Dr. Rolf, weigh in here. Do you think it's gotten to the point of idol worship in our country?
Sports certainly can be. Our priorities can certainly be out of whack, and there are some families that have made a substitute for God by having their kids participate, if not over-participate, in athletics.
Yeah, even those Sunday traveling teams. What do you think of that? I'm not trying to condemn, but we need to think about this. I know a lot of families who go, we don't have time for church because of our sporting events.
But it's not just sporting. I mean, our daughter was in dance, and she traveled
a lot, too.
I mean, there's always something that the children can be involved in that detracts from some of the values of the family. And then, of course, you look at some of these athletes, and they make millions of dollars, and yet they turn out not to be very good role models.
So how do we counterbalance that? What would you say to a young kid who's looking up to them and really wants to emulate the positive side of sports? How do you help them with all the stuff that gets reported in the news that's very negative? We've had a lot of domestic violence and all kinds of things that have been reported.
At my level with university athletes, and paint a realistic picture, but also point out that there is a great opportunity, not just financially, but there's a platform for you to bring glory to God, and there's a way that you can serve others and use the finances, which many do, for good causes.
Yeah, they do.
And volunteer work. And
the Walter Payton Award is given from the NFL every year for the athlete who has done the most charitable work and community work.
Yeah.
And then you get people like Tim Tebow, who may not have been the best role model from a quarterback situation, but is a phenomenal voice for Christians in the public eye. And you get that from others. There's Rashad Jennings, who plays for the Giants. And there's a television show called The 700 Club that every year at Super Bowl, World Series, the major events, they send the reporter and they talk to all the Christians on the teams, which is enlightening, because a lot of people, I know so many times I'm watching and I'm going, he's a Christian?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I have to like him now.
Right. Are the university athletes typically open to those talks about character and role modeling? Do they feel entitled? That's what I hear a lot on the university campuses. Well, they get away with everything because they're athletes. What do you think about that?
I think there is a degree of that, but I have opportunity to see them, talk to them, listen to them, and sometimes speak into them from a professional perspective, but also to try to get them to think about the bigger picture. The hardest conversations that you have to have with athletes a lot is limitations or something that may end your career or weigh things out and try to get them to see the bigger picture, because even most university athletes aren't going to play at the professional level. I'm always asking them about what their future plans are. What is your major? What are you focusing on? What are you studying? How is that coming? Because they need to have a plan and they need to be able to do whatever God has called them to do to the best of their ability. And if that's athletics, great, but there are other things that they need to take into consideration.
Well, a lot of kids in college aren't thinking about the future that terribly much. And certainly athletes probably are thinking, I have to do great now so I can go to the next level. And you're right. There's a tiny percentage of college athletes who are going to make it to the pro level no matter what the sport.
But what a great opportunity to be able to speak into their lives and to pray. For the parents, should they pray about what to do? I'm thinking of the parents who are listening and going, man, there's all these pros and cons, and what do I do? My kid's passionate. What do you think? What did you do with your own kids?
I think that it's an opportunity to sit down, evaluate the strengths, the weaknesses, the motives as to why you want them to be in the sports or they want to be in the sports, and look at objectives and what are we trying to accomplish by this sport, and can it be accomplished in a different way? And then take all of that together and absolutely pray about it and make it a conversation piece. I think sometimes we, as parents, reflexively make decisions because they came home one day and said, hey, I was playing soccer and I really like it and I want to do it. Okay, sounds great. And then you're looking online and you're getting schedules and how much does it cost and all this stuff. And you don't really take the time to say, well, what is it? Why are we doing it? Mm-hmm. And what are we trying to accomplish with it?
That's great advice. So pray about it. And as we watch the big game, keep it in perspective, enjoy it, but don't get too worked up over it, especially if your team loses. We want you to be a gracious loser and model the character of Christ in all that we do. Well, that's all the time that we have for today. Many thanks to our producer, Pam Miller, and our engineer, Jamie Hall, our social media director, Cody Gokenhauer, and our post-producer, Chris Underation. And thanks, of course, to my guest co-host, Dr. Norm Mintel, and our special guest today, Dr. Mark Rawls, who made this show a conversation. From all of us here at Faith Radio, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're here, we're doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone.
The Dr. Linda Mintel Show is a production of WQLU-FM 90.9 in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Well, thanks for listening to this conversation from the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and helping us grow the impact of the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and you'll never miss a show.